And now we'll hear our scripture reading from Matthew 13.
This reading comes from Matthew chapter 13, verses 24 through 30 and 36 through 43. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. But while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slave said to him, "Then do you want us to go out and gather them?" But he replied, "No, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. And at the harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Then he left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers. And they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen." This is the word of the Lord. Amen.
Thank you, Josie. So let's start with what's probably the first reaction of many of us to this parable. The problem with this parable, when we hear it, is that it taps right into whatever judgmental religious teaching we've ever gotten in our past. Whether we grew up Catholic or Protestant or something else altogether, most of us at some point got a good dose of this kind of thinking. Judgment is coming, the good will be rewarded with heaven, the bad will be thrown into the fire. But, I would say, parables are meant to be wisdom teachings. Not explicit, this is this and this is that, but more like a Zen koan, something that challenges us to chew on them, to think about the possibilities. And so something that clear cut may not be what this parable's trying to say. In fact, a wise word might be, when you approach a parable, forget what you think you know and try to be open and see what it may say to you today. So let's start with the physical, earthly reality of this parable. This week's reading actually is pretty timely. It's a parable about weeds. Weeds in the middle of July. I think most of us know a little something about that. All I have to do is look out my kitchen window to our little raised bed vegetable garden to be reminded on a daily basis that weeds are a reality of life. I've often had the thought to myself that I love gardening in May when I get to put things in and the soil feels so great and the little seedlings start to grow. I love all the possibilities of gardening in May. And I love gardening in June when the plants are really taking off and things are getting big and I'm excited. But in July, when there's not much produce yet, but there's lots of weeds, I don't love gardening all that much, especially not on hot, sticky days. Weeds, we all know, will take over if you let them. They are so hardy and so opportunistic, and they grow so fast. They are a trial to any of us who tries to garden or to have the perfect lawn. The bane of our life for many years and our lawn in Rush, New York, was Creeping Charlie. People come up with all sorts of solutions for weeds, mulch, old newspaper, spray herbicides, and more. Some people, like our neighbors next door right now, even have a solar-powered weeder. Whenever the sun is shining, you see this little green machine puttering around their raised bed, clipping whatever little shoots it detects underneath. It's amazing, I guess. I object on principle to the idea of using that kind of electronic gadget in my garden, of all places. And I see that Dave has had to put his plants further apart so that the machine can fit between them. And there's still weeds growing around the edges that the little solar-powered weeder doesn't get to. Yet I must admit, I don't see Dave out hoeing and weeding this summer, even when I'm out there sweating in my annual battle with weeds. Jesus told this parable about weeds and wheat based on everyday realities of rural life that he and his listeners knew all about. The kingdom of heaven, the realm of God, he said, is like a farmer who went out and sowed good wheat seed in his field. But at night, while everyone was sleeping, someone, an enemy, came and sowed weed seed in the midst of the field. The weeds probably would have been wild grasses, plants that look very much like wheat. So you'll notice that it says it's not only as they got up and got close to the point of starting to form the grain that the workers could realize, oh, this isn't all wheat. There's a bunch of other stuff growing in this field. And they went to the farmer saying, you know, what should we do? Do we want to pull us to pull it all up? But the farmer said, no, if you try to pull all the weeds up now, they're all interwoven with the wheat. You're going to end up yanking up lots of my wheat at the same time. Leave them be. And when the time of harvest comes, we'll sort it all out. And we'll keep the wheat in the barns and we'll throw the weeds into the fire to be burned. The explanation, the second part of the reading, that Matthew says that Jesus gave seems to really just amplify the view that this is about end of life, rewards and punishments. Because the explanation turns this parable into an allegory. The landowner is the Son of Man, the Messiah, the good seeds are the children of the realm of God, the weeds are the children of the evil one. And the end time is a final judgment, separating good people from the bad. Many contemporary commentators raise a lot of questions about whether this explanation and other explanations of the parables that we find in the Gospels really came from Jesus. Because these explanations often seem more like later commentary, a midrash in rabbinic terms, a preacher expounding on the text. And part of why they raise this question is because a parable turned into an allegory sort of loses its punch. A parable turned into an allegory lays it all out and tells you exactly what you're supposed to think. But the whole point of the parables is to challenge people's thinking, to get into our heads and get us to re-examine what we think we know is true. Parables, Jesus said, are for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see, those who are open and ready to discover the wisdom found within. And parables, like most wisdom teachings, can work on many levels. I don't think we can just dismiss the judgment part of this parable. This parable talks about weeds and wheat getting all mixed up together. And we know there is good and bad in life. And there are evil deeds and righteous deeds that people do. And there is a place for judgment on our part. Surely we are living in a time right now when we are called to be discerning, to judge what is right and what is wrong, to see and name injustice, to work for what we know is good. This is not a time for the easy pluralism that just says, well, everyone has a right to their own truth and it doesn't really matter what you think or what you do. This is a time when we're being called to dig down and clarify our values and the truths we believe really matter. But I think this parable also reminds us that we cannot really judge action, that we can judge actions, we can judge policies, but we really don't have what it takes to judge other people's motives or intentions. That is not really our business. We are asked to leave the sorting out of good and bad in people's hearts to God and God alone, in God's own time. Jesus warned us in other places, judge not that you be not judged. Don't try to tell someone to take the speck out of their own eye when you've got a plank in your own. So I think even taking that part of judgment and kind of holding that, we can also be challenged to think about what else might this parable be saying. We used this as our reading for evening prayer yesterday, reading it Lectio Divina style, three times through, and after the second time, asking for people to share a word or a phrase that really had spoken to them. Several said the phrase, let them both grow together, or grow together. And then we meditated together, and afterward I received the insight that this parable can apply to our minds during meditation. Thoughts come and go. Thoughts we quickly judge as good or bad. But the process of meditating is about letting them all grow together, giving them all back to God, not becoming attached to any of them, just letting go, letting be. I think in all inner work we do, meditation, self-learning, therapy, whatever, as we grow in wisdom and self-awareness, we realize that much of who we are is good and bad, strength and weakness all mixed together. Our giftedness is also usually our vulnerability and our weakness. So what in us is weeds and what is wheat? We hurt ourselves and others when we just try to rip things out of our lives. The way of love may turn what we think is weeds into fruitful grain. Time and God will tell. Weeds are part of life. That's for sure. Bad comes mixed in with the good. And rarely do we find anything or anyone that is all good or all bad. In ourselves, in events that happen, and certainly in other people. One piece of our current reckoning with history has been the revelation and discussion of the more complete histories of people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and many more heroes of our history. They did great things. They articulated great ideals, and they failed in some terrible ways to live up to what they said they believed. Some people, sort of on both ends of the spectrum, find this unacceptable. So they want heroes and heroines to be perfect, unsullied, and they are threatened by this kind of truth-telling. So some want to dismiss them and say they are failures because they had imperfections. Others want to deny all the things, all the ways they were not perfect. I think both sides come out wrong. We shouldn't deny the full truths of our history. We need the more complete story. And we need to admit that as human beings, none of us are perfect. All of us fail to live up to our best ideals. One of the reasons I love the Bible and find its stories to be so true is that again and again, from the Old through the New Testament, the Bible shows us human beings, people of faith, as full humans with frailty and failings and faithfulness. This week's Old Testament reading came from the story of Jacob. Jacob, the trickster, the deceiver, who stole his brother's birthright and lied to his aging blind father to get the blessing. On the run because he was afraid his brother was going to kill him, Jacob had this amazing revelation of heaven. God showed up to Jacob in the midst of and in spite of all his moral failures. I think the Bible invites us to realize we're all like Jacob. All of us wonderfully human and flawed. All of us both good and bad. And yet God keeps breaking in, keeps surprising us with grace, and keeps on using us to bring light and love into the world. Our lives are full of these ambiguities. We're not all good or all bad, and the choices, large and small, that we face in our lives are rarely clear-cut. Commentator David Luce believes that this parable is about this ambiguity of life. He says that our lives are littered with situations where there is no clear or easy answer. I hear this parable, he said, as Jesus' promise that in ambiguous, challenging situations, we have the promise that in the end, God will sort things out, which doesn't mean everything will turn out just fine. Sometimes we don't choose well. Sometimes things go wrong. The promise here isn't that Christian faith prevents hardship. The promise is that we are not justified by our right choices, but rather by grace through faith. Knowing we have God's unconditional love in spite of our choices frees us up to live. We don't live in an ideal world. Every week, we're faced with a myriad of challenging decisions, some small and large, to which there are no clear answers. Some decisions will get right, others wrong, and still others we will not know whether they were right or wrong for months or years to come. But we still have to make them. And then, he says, no matter how we fare, we can keep coming back and be reminded that God loves us anyway and promises that in the end, God will hold all our choices and all of our lives together in love. As we said at the beginning of worship, America lost two great men this week, C.T. Vivian and John Lewis. Both died after spending their entire lives in the struggle for justice and freedom. Their lives were forged by their experiences as black men living in America, and their strength and conviction was rooted in their deep faith in God's love and God's justice. They were powerful role models of what it takes to hold people in power accountable, to name evil deeds and unjust policies for what they are. They knew the reality of evil, the realities, the dangers, the difficulties, and losses of life. And they spoke the truth at great cost to themselves and at the risk of their lives. But they did not do it in vindictive ways. They did not seek revenge when they were wronged. They sought freedom and justice for all. And now, as their lives have ended, we judge them. History will judge them even more. And we can know they were not perfect. They had their failings, but they were great men, and an essential part of their greatness was their humility, their gentleness, their love. They knew they were human like the rest of us, weeds and wheat like all of us, but they dared to believe in their own worth and goodness as children of God and in the worth of all people, including those people the world wants to judge as weeds to be thrown away. Brian Stevenson is the founding lawyer of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama. He and others in that organization had been working for over 30 years to provide legal representation to people who have been wrongly convicted, unfairly sentenced, or abused in state jails and prisons. They work with those most desperate and in need, all sorts of men, women, and children trapped in the criminal justice system. Brian and the Equal Justice Initiative were the driving force behind the creation of the Lynching Memorial and Museum in Montgomery that memorializes victims of white supremacy. Brian has written a book, now turned into a film, both called Just Mercy. Brian, with all the weight of his experience of convicts, of the criminal justice system, of mass incarceration, of white supremacy, writes these words: "There is a strength, a power even, in understanding brokenness, because embracing our brokenness creates a need and a desire for mercy, and perhaps a corresponding need to show mercy. When you experience mercy, you learn things that are hard to learn otherwise. You see things you can't otherwise see. You hear things you can't otherwise hear. You begin to recognize the humanity that resides in each of us. Each of us," Brian says, "is more than the worst thing we've ever done. We all need mercy. We all need justice. And perhaps we all need some measure of unmerited grace." Weeds, wheat, all mixed up together in us, in all people. God and God alone knows our hearts, and God offers us always mercy, just mercy.